I'm Andrea Turner, KPFA. I'm glad to see we only had a few little polka dots. I expected 10 pages of it, but this looks good. I'm concerned about, the usage of staff, if we could get back to that, and percent of time, in particular, to have our CFO sometimes serve as a interim GM and that kind of thing. That's as well as to carry out, other duties. And I'm glad to see that you have addressed this somewhat in terms of recommending other job functions. Have you looked at the total system in terms of job functions? So, as related to finance, I noticed you have some down here for personnel. Personnel records for part-time and temporary employees incomplete. And it seems to be systemic, throughout. Would you recommend, some other additional staff to cover some of these areas where there's missing functions? Or did you, what tool did you use to do in a functional assessment of jobs that may be needed throughout the system? You said you interviewed.
Right. We interviewed business manager, the accounting staff at KPFA, the interim GM at the time, and the National Accounting Office staff. We do an extensive level of test of transactions. So, for example, we would notice that just about every check request at KPFA had not been properly signed, which means that with a check request, the person preparing it should initial it, which was done, and the clerk there is very good. That's not a problem. But often the general manager or the business manager would not be available, so it would never be really approved properly. So you need to have a full-time business manager and a full-time available general manager at that station to approve the transactions. That would be key on point.
You were saying updated in a timely manner.
Uh-huh.
So are we looking at, do you impart instructions on how that could be done, or do you just report what you see?
This is our report, yeah. We report our findings and then our recommendations. I think that there needs to be performance reviews done. I think what you're inquiring about is very similar to what was inquired about by Ken as well. This is an area that does need to be done across the organization, breaking down job descriptions, doing performance reviews, making some sort of an analysis and determination. And sure, sorry. And then taking action, whether it's hiring new individuals or terminating individuals or reorganizing the job, those sorts of things that we don't really make specific recommendations on.
Okay. I was just basically trying to get to understanding, what are some of the systems that need to be put in place,
uh-huh.
and whether you participate in giving more detail in your recommendations, so that we can run with it, pick up the information, and be able to set up or go forward, as opposed to saying that we need to standardize the system. So you recommend a book for us.
Sorry. Well, at KPFA specifically, the check requisition process is not being done properly, and it needs to be done properly. It's not so much that you need to hire someone to do that,
okay. But
the people involved have to restructure how they do things. So, okay.
Thank you. Teresa Allen is next.
I'm not asking for names, but I would like some specifics, examples of how has non-cooperation from the business managers manifested itself? Has it hindered you? How much might this have contributed to your cost to us? have been elevated, because I remember when you were here before that I was trying to get a figure on how much does it cost to have an audit, and I was told that, well, if we got our act together, it could be less expensive. So I'm wondering if there was cooperation from the business managers. Did they provide everything you needed? And you don't have to name names, but can you give some examples of how we might be real clear to them that they should
okay.
be more systematic?
I would love to address that question. we come in for a preliminary audit for a week at the national office, and we make all of our requests, and they're scheduled and they're itemized. And the national office even anticipates our arrival and has already made most of those requests to all the business managers. And that's done usually in October. This year, it was a late start. We got started in the middle of November. So all those requests went out either early November or when we got there in November. From the national office, from most of the stations, it went pretty well. We were able to move right along. Then we come back in December, and anything that we don't have, we really have to have it in December. That's when we're doing our detailed audit procedures, our field work, finishing up the audit in December is to the extent humanly possible. Indeed, this year on December 22nd, we got a consolidated trial balance with every adjusting entry that we were aware of done, and the books were in effect sort of provisionally closed or pre-closing at that point. And from there, we can move forward and start generating our report and doing our footnotes and finishing up our audit work from our office in New York. The process went really pretty well that way. There were a couple of stations where it was difficult getting information on a timely basis. Indeed, in one station, one business manager, we just got the rest of the audit documentation last week. last week, we just got the rest of the requested audit documentation that had been really requested back in November. So,
and you can specifically say this person was incompetent or uncooperative?
I'll speak about that more specifically later, but I think it has to do with a difficulty between the business managers and the national offices and not always being cooperative. Usually it's fine, but not always. So,
yeah. Thank you. I'll put you back on after other people. Okay?
Yeah, and I want can I ask another question?
Of course you can, Teresa.
Okay. Restricted donations. Can you briefly tell us what a restricted donation is, and an example of how we can properly monitor that?
Sure. When we get to the audit report, I'll refer you to the schedule of temporarily restricted funds, which I believe is on page 13 of the audit report.
Okay.
You'll see which kinds of restricted donations you have there. Basically, you have two different kinds, actually. You have temporarily restricted funds, which are someone writes a check and says, please use this for the building fund, or please use this for the acquisition of an equipment that you need, or please use this for a particular purpose. And as soon as you're able to use those funds for that purpose, then those funds are no longer restricted. They've been used, and that's a normal course of things. But it needs to be tracked. We need to know what the donor intended. It really should be in writing. It shouldn't just be a phone call. It should really be written on the check, et cetera. So we can really track those things. The organization should have a separate account that those funds go into until they're able to be released and used. That's what we're speaking to. Then you also have endowment funds, which are permanent, and they would go into some sort of a permanent investment fund, and only the income would be released for the organization. You'll see that on page 14 of the audit report. The documentation is weak. Oftentimes there's ambiguity as to what was the purpose of the donation or the grant, usually from an individual. It may have been based on a phone call. It may have been at a fundraising event. And there may or may not have been written documentation. So when we get to the audit report, I want to show you our most recent revision. The reason this says draft is one of those issues just got clarified by me getting on the phone with the donor just the other day, so I could figure this out for sure, so we don't misrepresent the donor on the audit report.
Thank you.
So that's what we're talking about.
Thank you. Next person is Bill, and then Nia, and then Tracy.
Well, most of this is why we covered an executive session, but do you feel comfortable saying anything now about which stations you're having the most problems with getting information and following procedures and all that stuff without naming names?
Well, in my management comments, we referred to three stations.
The same three, okay.
WPFW has really been the most cooperative and making the most progress. And WBAI is also been making progress. That's all else.
You get to ask.
Thank you so much, by the way. We grilled him. We asked a lot of questions on the audit committee call. He was very patient. Really appreciate your time.
Okay.
And thanks for waiting up for us while we were getting quorum here this morning, too.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Nia.
Good morning, Ross. Is this on?
Can you hear me, John?
Yes. I don't want John to yell at me back there. I'm still trying to help Andrea get rid of one of her polka dots, as she puts it. And people could see why the audit committee is the most popular committee in a not-for-profit. In terms of the...
Yes, there you go. Thank you.
Is it? Okay,
that
great.
Much better, yeah.
Okay, we run on top of it. The third polka dot that Ross and I have been very respectfully and lovingly haggling over. I'm not done. I said Andrea talked about her polka dots. She's from Berkeley. Okay.
I gave you one of them to take. Go on, Nia. You got the floor.
But they're audit, he's an audit committee member, so it's okay. The third polka. KPFA Berkeley. And the page is, I don't know what page. Okay, we got KPFA Berkeley? Okay. The third polka dot, which is the checks payable to KPFA mailed to KPFA post office. And also, I'm still grappling, and I have been since last Monday, Ross, as to how this could be a control issue for the national office. Like you and I talked on the committee call, that the foundation has no way of controlling anyone who wants to do that. So to hold the foundation accountable and make that be a bullet point for us, I still don't understand. I mean, Arlene could put up on the website whatever she wants to put up to say, look, you should not do this. You should not support Cape. Whatever it is, but she and LaVarne can't prevent persons from donating. Do you get what I'm saying? So I don't see how that is a control issue for the foundation.
I'll be glad to speak to that. In the old conventional sense of internal controls, you would be absolutely correct. The whole purpose behind COSO, which came out, wants you to address the control environment, control activities, risk assessments. This is an area of risk that there could be, so to speak, a diversion of funds. In the past, listeners were supporting the station, and now listeners are sending their funds elsewhere. It's a control risk that needs to be commented upon. It's not necessarily that somebody did something wrong. It's not necessarily that here's exactly our recommendation to prevent this from happening. I think Arlene's response was fine, which is they have publicly gone on record to inform people that if you do send monies to Save KPFA, they may not be a 501c3 organization. It is not supporting KPFA directly, and it is not a charitable contribution deduction. So obviously you can't control what donors choose to do. But it is a comment to management. This is a management report that this is a risk area for the organization.
Yes,
Arlene?
Yeah, the other
The other thing that we have done is we have followed through with the Save KPFA organization, and to the best of our knowledge, they have at least assured us that they have no money, that there have not been any checks mailed to that address, that they're only pledges. And so consequently, at least according to legal advice that we have received, there's really no action that we can take. I have sent statements to be posted on both the national and the KPFA websites to alert people that might be contributing. So those are the two actions that we've taken at a national level on that.
Okay.
Thank you. Nia, you had another question before I move on?
No, I was going to ask, was there any money sent to the foundation? But Arlene just answered the question. Thank you. I have another question. Okay. What's the time allotment for Ross, you, LaVarne, and me out of the 3 hours that we have? Because Ross should go on to the, because the financials would take longer, so maybe we should move on.
Well, I do think that we need to give him full, while we have our auditor here, we need to at least let the entire board ask their questions of him. It's 10:30 now. We have till 12. We have about another hour and a half in open session, so I think there'll be sufficient time still, even for everyone to ask their questions and still go on to other financials. So we're going to play this a little bit by ear here. I mean, it's more important to give him our time since he's going to be leaving us afternoon. Yeah. But I think we'll have sufficient time. We have another hour and a half right now. So,
Should he move to the financials? Because that's going to take longer.
Well, I want to finish letting people ask their questions right now since all these issues have been raised. Yeah. At least one, and then we'll go on to the financials. I'll come back to people who've already asked a question once. Thank you. I've got to remember who is next. Is Tracy. Thank you.
Hi. Going to the station that I represent, which is KPFA, I just wanted to ask for a little bit more detail on two items that you pointed out as material weaknesses, just so I understand what's currently happening and what impact we're facing. The first involved bank lockbox not being used. I actually was not aware of that, and I just wanted a little bit of clarification about what was happening instead of using the bank lockbox, for which we are in fact paying, I think. And then the second question that I had regarded cash receipts not being deposited on a timely basis. I am certainly aware of one cash receipt that was not deposited on a timely basis, but I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit on the scope of that. It looks like it's an ongoing repeat comment, and what would be a timely basis as opposed to what we're currently doing.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad you asked that question. The comment was probably prompted by the prior auditor, given that check that you're, I'm sure, aware of that was held and not deposited. I didn't remove the comment because I wasn't satisfied in my interviews and in my audit work at KPFA that the cash receipts process was being done in a timely and sound manner. You have a business manager who has access to the general ledger, who is opening up the mail from the post office box, who's making deposits near her home because it's convenient, who's not always in the office, not doing things on a regular basis. To me, that's just a prescription for trouble with your cash receipts function. Why not use the lockbox? Their complaint was it was too costly. But someone should review that, and I believe you do already have a lockbox. So I think it would be if it cost a little extra to use a lockbox, it would probably be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, we absolutely did what you're instructing us to do, and during this whole planning process. And with the change in managers at KPFA in order to effect those things to get it done. But we've worked with Wells Fargo. Lockbox is set up. We've had basically a campaign from the business manager with during the planning function for us not to do that. Basically the same argument that was given to you that's been given to the Finance Committee and all of us as we went through the plan. So we in terms of how to do that, we can go into closed session and talk about what we need to just go in and affect the change, because it's all set up, it's all ready to go.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there anyone who's not asked a question once before I go on to secondary? Okay, Lydia, please go ahead. Thank you.
So I see that there isn't a sheet in this document on KPFK, so what does that mean?
Aren't we glad?
Don't brag.
I apologize. I have no critical material weakness comments on KPFK.
We don't need that kind of apology. Thank you very much.
Or KPFT.
Okay, thank you.
I know about it better than to come to Houston and to Texas.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'll go to the secondary questions for I had Alex and Ken.
Okay, I wanted to get back to the issue of this KPFA and the Save KPFA organization. In your opinion, I guess you've dealt with nonprofits and charities for many years. Is this not an issue that could be pursued by legal authorities? We have a situation where a private interest group is using the name of KPFA and telling potential donors to send their checks to them. We have no controls over this private group. They claim they have no checks. We don't know that for a fact. We know nothing about what could be going on. And they're using our name. In my opinion, a fraudulent practice, and it's undermining the foundation. Is there no legal recourse possible here?
Someone else could speak to that, I believe. I think that was looked into. I don't know.
Ms. Gurnianda.
We have taken that up with three different attorneys, and it basically did obviously get back, and there was a change on their...
I'm not asking for specifics on this case.
I understand. I'm saying Arlene should not discuss in open session any advice that she received from attorney.
Thank you. And we'll have an opportunity for that. There's an hour of executive session scheduled. Okay. Thank you. Did you have anything else, Alex, you wanted to ask? The interface between MEMSIS and...
I asked it before. I don't remember if I got the answer. Is there a way to interface between MEMSIS and the general ledger database, or is it simply a matter that you have to do double entry?
Okay, yes, good question. No, the two are not integrated or interfaced, aside from credit card processing, where MEMSIS interfaces with the credit card processing. But the comment has to do with reconciling. In MEMSIS, you not only have the pledges recorded, you also have the payments on the pledges recorded to keep track of a donor's balance so that you could follow up and send them a second or third request for their pledge. So as the payments are logged into MEMSIS, they're independently processed and deposited into the general ledger system. Some stations, and here I can refer to KPFA, it is reconciled, although it could be reconciled more timely, but it is reconciled. In other stations, it is not reconciled. So you don't really know if there were funds that were raised that didn't quite make it into the books. So that's the reason for that comment. To integrate those two would be very problematic, because you have a lot of transactions and stuff in MEMSIS that you don't want to just shove them through the general ledger accounting system. So I'm not recommending that the two be integrated, but I am recommending that the two be reconciled.
Okay. Thank you. Ken?
In regards to... service contracts and or outsourcing, did you inspect or evaluate whether there are certain administrative functions that we should get a service or outsourced, and maybe some that we're currently outsourcing that we should handle internally? I would speak to contracts for maintaining computers, hardware, or equipment, and even accounting. Are there certain functions that should be outsourced that aren't, and there are certain functions currently outsourced that should be taken on internally?
Again, it's an excellent question. It goes to finance and operations. As far as our audit, we do not conduct that analysis to determine whether something should be outsourced because it would be save the organization money or it might be delivered better. Perhaps someone else could speak to that, LaVarne or Arlene, but no, that was not part of the audit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Andrea and then LaVarne.
You keep mentioning timely, and so I just need to know Oh, you're doing the Ken thing on me again. What do you mean by timely? Are you talking about with turnover? Things should be signed off every 30 days, or because it sounds really weighted. When you use the term as if staff is not doing anything. That's why I was trying to get to the staff ratio of time and roles and functions with you earlier. So what do you mean when you say time is? If nothing else, it's just educational for me to understand what you mean by your system.
Very, very glad you asked that question. I do refer to timely many times. Essentially, the point to be made here is that the whole functionality of the accounting system needs to result in timely reporting to management. So you have a budget versus actual report on a monthly basis. Say, the 15th of the month for the previous month would be wonderful. At least by the 30th of the month for the previous month would be good. To state that you can't do it because the audit's not finished and you haven't had a monthly budget versus actual since, October, that's not, I don't know how you as a board member can function that way. So that's what I'm talking about.
Thank you. I was just about to touch on that very topic. So, that's kind of like what I've been living under since I came on in January of 2009. So in terms of Great Plains database, that means that, we're going to have to prioritize our funds and to actually get a contract with Microsoft and with Great Plains so that I can have that done. But most important is I need another person in the office, because what happens during the audit is that Lynn is really leading it and Efren is doing some of the reports. So when you're concentrating on producing working with the audit, that means that, Lynn is coordinating with all the business managers and getting the information in. So it's both the fact that not having the contract with Microsoft so we can call them up and get that information. But, yeah, that has been a problem for since I came on 2 years ago. And it's once we get this done, but it's also the lack again of a person there who can do some of these chores while we're actually doing the audit too. And in addition, we've had to redistribute the payroll chore because that person left. So, and the other point was on, need some information or talk about, the MEMSIS database. Now, the MEMSIS database, each station has their own individual contract. So there's no database, MEMSIS database, that we can put into the national office that would source all five stations. So then the way we get information now is that I work with the database managers and they will send the information on fulfillment rates and I can get that in. And we have like meetings with them like 3 to 6 months every year. But, so in terms of sourcing the membership databases, we really can't. There's no way to do that in the national office because each station is individually has a contract with MEMSIS and has their own unique software and everything set up. So when you...
Let me clarify. I was not recommending that MEMSIS be integrated with the general ledger in any way. That would
be very. In terms of access, you said with the national office, we should. I thought you had a point here that we should have be able to see National Office Accounting personnel are not adequately trained in both the MEMSIS and the Great Plains General Ledger software packages. So I don't know if this is directed at all business managers or just a staff for the national office at this point here.
It's addressed to all accounting personnel. So you're I do feel the national office should have access to MEMSIS to be able to check it.
That would require like the software package for each individual station. So there's no one central consolidated MEMSIS database where we could have it there at the national office. There's no one consolidated MEMSIS database. Each station has their own individual contract. So what you would have to do is to get a copy of that and put that on an individual, you know, computer there in the national office for these five stations, if you could do that. There is no consolidated, and various stations are at different levels of MEMSIS, you know, in terms of the fixes that they have in there.
Well, perhaps this could go to the internal auditor function where they travel around to each division and do the work there. Then.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Next.
In reference to the program Nemesis that we're currently using, I run my own business, and if I had five different entities and I wanted to look at one of my entities, then wouldn't it be feasible to just be able to network it so everything she should be able to see instead of somebody being on this level and this level? And it seems like it's incompetent to not be able to have a system that is integrated to the national office where if Arlene needed to look at something, she could look at it and say, okay, wait, what, you know, a tracking that comes from the top instead of our little babies running around saying, okay, I got mine and yours is this level, and it doesn't make sense.
They can do that with a general ledger system, absolutely, and they do that all the time, but not with MEMSIS. So I don't know why they couldn't, with an IT person involved, just remote in and look at it. But
we will speak with our IT people here in the back and get their opinion on that.
And in closing with that, if Nemesis seems to be up and down and all around, and
Nemesis.
It's becoming to be a nemesis to me, being with Pacific. And I appreciate it if I say what I say, that I can say what I say without being corrected. Thank you. But I'm just being. What I'm saying is, because of being with Pacifica for 30 years plus, it seems like it's just no accountability at the top. Not saying that our folks are not doing their job now. I'm saying for the last few years, it just seemed like it's always been somebody's higher, somebody's lower as far as what's up in the digital world. And if this particular program seems to have different scales where our sister stations within the foundation are at different levels, then we need to maybe look at another program that can be started from the top and then integrated back down to the stations where everybody starts off fresh at the same level, and nothing has to deal with software upgrade for this version or that version. If you're running off 1.4 and they got 2.6, then it's just going to be, you know, and I do software, so I mean, it's baffling. It's a nemesis.
Can I make another comment?
Well, let Mr. Wisdom. Okay. Well, go ahead, Lorraine.
I was just going to say that, and to get assistance and training from MEMSIS, it's very expensive. And New York, we were going to schedule training, and it was just really, really, you know, cost prohibitive. And what we did was we got personnel from WPFW, who has expertise in MEMSIS to go up to New York and to train the staff there and spend time there. And actually, of course, the work that the person did paid for it, because we were able to get fulfillment on that. But
You know, that the membership database
is... Excuse me, Madam Chair, just point of information. Could we have a time check, please?
We are at 10:41 right now.
Okay. I think I would prefer someone else because, you know, I hate to bring up the whole political climate with Pacifica, but when you try to address some issues, then there, and particularly with the MEMSA system, it sometimes presents, it's not done, you know, anyway, I think we should address it.
I just want to point out that the expert we sent to WBAI to help with MEMSIS was Zataria from WPFW.
Zataria Joyner.
Right.
She's the expert in MEMSIS.
Exactly.
Maybe she should be the at the national office as the internal auditor also. My thing, if it's somebody that's trained and they have that, you know, expertise, then we should look at retaining her to make sure that the network is up to par, that all the software is at the same playing field, that nobody's here, nobody's there. And, you know, my thing is, I mean, I do my own books. It's easy for me to know what I got going on because I'm going to do my books. But when I see that, you know, money's sitting around, we can't get things to deposit, it just concerns me. And when I hear the auditor say things that I heard from last year, it's even more alarming and concerning, especially, I'm sure, to the new folks that are coming on board, that we need to get our books in order. And without the finances in order, then, like, again, like I told folks yesterday, we've got water on the boat, and we can't keep plugging holes if we keep staying at these kind of levels. So we need to up the level and be into the digital era and come out of the 20th century and into the 21st century with the technology.
May I just add that Terry Guy is also is an expert, and he's gone out to New York also to train. So just want to mention that.
Point well taken, and this is really, I think it has to occur at this level with the national board for emphasis to be added on. We've had these comments before. What is it we need to do? This is not the way you run your business, this is the way you want Pacifica to run its business as well, in a better fashion. That's exactly the kind of conversation that needs to go on.
Carolyn, you're next.
One of the things about coming back to the board after having been away for a year is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. This problem with MEMSIS, I remember dealing with this 3-4 years ago, and I did a lot of investigation. We do have 5 separate contracts, and the owner, it's a small company, 2 people, which is one reason consultation is so expensive, pointed out that the software was never designed for financial records. It was a fundraising tracking system. And so reconciling it is more than difficult. Not impossible, but it's more than difficult. Number 2, every station has an individual contract, and everybody buys patches as they need them. The owner said that he's appalled at the fact that one station pays for a patch and doesn't share it with the other 4. And sometimes there is redundancy. People will call him and ask him for a correction, and he's already given it to another station, which kept it close to the vest and, for whatever reason, didn't bother to share it. So it's a messed up system, the 5 separate contracts. I recommended then, and I'd like to recommend again, that we get a new system, a system that, in fact, can be integrated with financial software to make life easier, doesn't cost a fortune to maintain that way. And I think with Kim Murray and other people now identified as knowing something about software and the system, we have some expertise, and we should go with it and just change the system. I know it's going to be expensive, but in the end, I have a feeling that MEMSIS has cost us a fortune in lost money, lost revenues, untracked, and the inability to reconcile that data with the other systems means that our fundraising efforts have been hampered. So I would like to recommend that we appoint a couple of people here to look into this and make a very firm recommendation to chuck it, get the water out of the boat, and build a new boat. Thank you.
Lydia, did you want to speak?
speak? Yeah, I mean, I think that first, if we have two people in the foundation who are expert in MEMSIS, then we should hear from them first before we jump into, like, a new program. Simply because we're not trained may be an aspect of it. And but, you know, somebody I know like Terry Guy, who's been with us for decades, would be able to offer an informed opinion, as would the woman from PFW. I forgot her name.
Okay. And Chris Stellick from KPFA is quite knowledgeable on systems. Is he still there, Chris Stellick?
Okay, thank you. And Ken, I want to wrap up this part so we can go on to the financial statements here, because we've only got so much time this morning. So go ahead.
A separate subject. In terms of an internal auditor that you're recommending, I'm concerned about command level of action. In other words, if the internal auditor, it would be in what department? Under the CFO? And or have you ever recommended this where the auditor has more autonomy and is separated, not influenced or governed by managed by high, what tier of management? In other words, he has to have some autonomy or in an ivory tower to a degree, so he's not influenced too much by what he's trying to correct.
The recommendation was that the internal auditor would report directly two ways, to the, not only the CFO but also the audit committee, or directly to the board. But it should have a dual reporting function. But this, I envision this person being very useful to the national office. So it would be under the national office.
Thank you. Okay, I think we've probably exhausted questions on the management letter. Can we go on to the financial statements? And I'm sorry? I heard a voice.
Shall I move on?
Yes, okay. Please. Thank you, because we have about an hour and 15 minutes left in open session, so, and then we have an hour closed. Thank you so much.
Okay. Due to the time constraint, you all have a copy of the audit report. I'm not going to read each line, each item from the audit report. It's a 26-page document, so I'm going to cover the highlights. I'm also going to bring in some prior year information as comparison to put it into perspective, what the numbers mean, what they don't mean, and then go into some of the footnote disclosures, and most specifically the going concern issue, which is disclosed in footnote number 20. We'll get to that at the end of the report. It is an unqualified report. And with the disclosure as to a going concern issue, which we'll come back to.
Can you define what unqualified report means?
Unqualified means that it was a clean audit. We have no problem issuing a financial statement that we feel represents fairly the financial condition, the statement of activities, the statement of cash flows, and the operations of the organization for the year ended September 30th, 2010. A qualified audit report, for example, would mean that our scope was limited, we were unable to complete the audit, or we have some serious concerns mm-hmm. that qualify the report. We don't have those. Even though we have all these comments in terms of the audit process, as I said before, we do feel that any errors that were in the normal course of business were corrected at the national office, and we're not aware of anything of a material nature at all that would distort or render this report not as useful as it should be. So the report is fine. Yeah. Okay. Let's start with the balance sheet, which is on page 2. And again, I'm going to highlight what I feel are the most key attributes. This is what's considered a divided or classified balance sheet. So you're showing your current assets on top, your non-current assets on the bottom. Under the current section, we have cash, investments, pledges receivable, other receivables, premium inventory, and prepaid expenses, which add up to $1.7 million, 1758. If you go to the next page, page 3, you'll see current liabilities, which again have been divided. The liability section has been divided between the current portion due within 1 year and the non-current portion, which is due after 1 year. Under the current portion, you have accounts payable, the line of credit, accrued expenses and benefits, and accrued expenses and benefits, adding up to $2,553,000. Since current liabilities exceed current assets by $795,000, there is indeed a working capital deficit. If there is one key number, one key ratio for this board to remember from this audit report, you should focus on working capital. It's the key indicator of the financial health of the organization. To put this into a little bit of perspective, it's $795,000 negative at September 30, 2010. A year ago, it was $702,000 positive, which is still very low.
Excuse me, and what page is that number reflected on, please?
The 702 would be in the prior audit report.
Okay.
From the previous auditors. This is not a comparison audit report, so you don't see it in this report. You'll okay. have to refer to the prior report.
Thank you, just for clarity, because I think people are looking for that number right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
You'll see in the footnote a reference as well. But
thank you.
If you go, I've made a little table here, and September 30th, 08, for example, the working capital was $2.8 million. September 30th, 07, it was $2.8 million. September 30th, 06, it was $2.8 million. Those are healthy.
Sorry, what page are you on, sir?
I'm not on the report. Now I'm just adding in sort of a historical perspective because I wanted to really focus on working capital.
Okay. I'm sorry.
And,
so go ahead.
And then we will move on to the rest of the report.
Thank you. If you could restate those figures just because people don't have them to refer to on the page.
Right.
Thank you.
The working capital for the year ended September 30, 2010 is actually a deficit of $795,000. That means if you were to pay all of your bills today, you would be short $795,000 in cash. So you're really working against that credit. In the past, you'd have to go all the way back to September 30th, 2002 before there was a negative working capital, and that's when there was a very severe financial condition at that time, and the organization was indeed facing a bankruptcy potential. It didn't have to do that. The listeners came to the rescue, and it quickly came out of it. But that's how bad that was, and that's how bad it's beginning to be here as well. Last year was $702,000 positive, which is low, but not nearly as bad as $795,000 negative. And then 2 years ago, it was $2.8 million of positive working capital, which was actually a healthy number. I would recommend about $2 million for this organization. So it's $795,000 negative. It needs to be at $2 million. It needs to, it's got to do $2.8 million to recover. And we'll talk about other numbers that relate to that as we go along. Those are the key attributes from the balance sheet. On the revenue and support section, listener support is combined with donations on one line. You'll see on page 4, we have listener support / donations at $10,585,000. Again, that includes major donations. To put that into perspective, a year ago, September 30th, 09, listener support was $9,800,000. So it has come up by about $780,000 from the year before. But if you go back to September 30th, 08, it was at $13.5 million. On September 30th, 07, it was at $13.6 million. September 30th, 06, it was $13.7 million. September 30th, 05, it was $13.7 million. So it was really in conjunction with the economy starting in October 08, that there was a severe shortfall in listener support, and that's been going on for over 2 years now. If you look at the bottom line number for September 30th, 2010, there is a loss or a decrease in net assets of $1,959,000. To put that in perspective, a year ago that was $2.7 million. And then the year before that, it was 433,000. Over the past three-year period, from September 30th, 08, 09, and 2010, there has been a total of about $5 million in losses for the organization, which burned up that $2.8 million of working capital and then put the organization further into debt. So that is the severity of the financial condition at September 30, 2010. And that's what's giving rise to the going concern issue.
Thank you.
If we look at page 5, the statement of functional expenses, which breaks down the expenses as required for GAAP accounting purposes, also required by the Form 990 for tax reporting purposes, it allows the donor to take a look at how much of the donation is going for program services versus management in general versus fundraising. It breaks down that $7,800,000 approximately for program services, $4.1 million for management in general, and $3.4 million for fundraising and development. However, keep in mind that fundraising and development includes premiums and shipping of premiums for donations of $1 million. It also includes the cost of the community events at $303,000, and it also includes the finance charges on the credit cards for the listener support of $178,000. But that results in about a 22%, 22 cents on the dollar for fundraising, 27 cents on the dollar for management in general, and 51 cents on the dollar for program services. Yes?
Repeat those numbers.
Okay.
That's not on here, right?
No, that's not on the report.
And if you could speak closer into the mic, Mr. Wisdom.
Okay.
You can lift it up so it's more comfortable. Just raise it a little. No.
Just looking at the totals on page 5, right?
Here, John will adjust it for you.
Yes, I'm looking at page 5.
Actually, here. Yeah, if you could just put that in the right position for him, please. Thank you.
To repeat, Ken, the percentages between programs, management in general, and fundraising are as follows. The percentage is 51% programs, or 51 cents on the dollar, 27% management in general, or 27 cents on the dollar, and 22% for fundraising, or 22 cents on the dollar.
Okay, go ahead and let him fix that for you, please.
The total payroll for September 30, 2010 was approximately $7.4 million. And to provide historical perspective on that number, it was $7.7 million the year before, ended September 30, 2009, $8.7 million September 30, 2008, $8.5 million September 30th, 07, $7.9 million September 30th, 06. So there has been some controlled cost on the payroll side in the last 2 years. Also, while we're on the page 5 for expenses, I'll highlight a few items. The audit fees last year were $150,000. We're bringing it in at about half of that for this year, so there will be a savings there. The tower expense at $590,000 is a growing expense that's causing difficulty for the organization.
I'm sorry, could you please repeat that?
Yes, if you look on page 5, I'm just highlighting some of the key figures. If you go down where it says rent tower, you will see $590,000. That's primarily WBAI's tower rent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is causing, that's been an increasing cost.
Thank you.
Also, the legal settlements for this year were $83,000. And the legal fees were $245,000. Moving to page 6, the statement of cash flows. Even though the organization lost $1.9 million, that was not exactly a cash loss. I often have to explain, especially with not-for-profit organizations, the difference between their net surplus or deficit for the year versus what that meant in terms of their cash flow. They're not exactly the same thing. Some of the key elements are depreciation is $314,000. That's not a cash item. And the payables, between accounts payable and accrued expense, they increased about 1.1, and then the accrued benefits down. So it's really about $750,000 increase in payables, which helped the cash flow. So the actual decrease in the cash was $610,000. So even though there was a reported loss of $1.9 million, it required only $600,000 of cash because $300,000 was non-cash, it was depreciation, and there was about $750,000 that's increase in payables. There are also some pledges receivables collected, and this details all the different components of what went into the cash flow, so that even though there was a $1.9 million loss, it only actually cost the organization $610,000. But, of course, we're now further into debt. So now I'm moving into the footnote section, starting on page 7. It's explanatory of the basic accounting principles involved, the accrual basis for the organization, the revenue recognition treatment between unrestricted, temporarily restricted, or permanently restricted funds. And if you move on to page 11, describes the restricted cash. There is a $100,000 CD which is held as collateral that's listed under restricted cash. There is $50,000 also a KPFA that's restricted by the bank for ACH clearing purposes. There is a $200,000 building fund at WPFW and some income on that that's being held for the building. And the national office is holding $65,723 against a bequest of $375,000, which was used for operations, and then an agreement was made to restore the $375,000 over time back to the endowment. And as of the date of the report, $65,723 is under the restricted cash, and there's another about $310,000 that needs to be restored to that fund.